States live. Expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Everybody, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. We are taking all calls this morning about money and real estate, as we always do. The lines are wide open, 404-872-0750. If you want to be first up, now's the time to call. That's how it always is. I want to start today talking about the week that wasn't for the U.S. economy. Boy, what a rough week we've had. The Dow Jones fell nearly 200 points this week to wind up at 11,951 and change. It is the sixth week in a row of drops. It is the longest slump since 2002. We also saw the blue chip index fall below 12,000 for the first time since March. So not good numbers. The S&P alone lost 2.2% this week to end up at about 1270. What happened here? We saw that Ben Bernanke said the economy remains uneven, though he feels optimistic about the second half. Rewind a year, folks. He's been feeling optimistic about the economic recovery for at least the last 2.5 to 3 years, as far as I can tell. And yet, where were we at the high of this thing? I mean, if you look back, 2006, we're now at 2011. This is a pretty darn prolonged slump. And if you look at what's going on in real estate, truly you can think that the number of existing homes being sold and the number of new homes being sold is being, nearly on death's door. It is a very weak real estate economy, particularly for new homes. The new home numbers are just atrocious. There's no other way to put it. And, of course, that all feeds into itself, because when you're building homes, you've got good jobs. Those people are paying their mortgages. They're paying their credit card bills. They're buying gas at $4 plus a gallon. Things are good. And when they don't have jobs, they're not. And in every other recovery since World War II, housing has played a huge part. And that's just not happening. Just not happening at all. So what else happened this week? Well, OPEC warned on oil production. And then President Obama said he'd open up the U.S. Strategic Reserve. Fabulous. First-time unemployment claims higher than expected at about 427,000, I think, again this week. We have only recovered 25% of the 8.5 million jobs lost in the Great Recession. 25%. That's a little over 2 million jobs, almost 3 million jobs. That's not very many. And that doesn't account for the fact that our economy continues to expand at about 175,000 jobs a month. So those people don't have jobs either. Very, very interesting to kind of think about where that's going. And what are we doing about that? Nothing much, as it appears, because the Republicans are intent on shrinking the deficit. And remember, folks, every time you shrink the deficit, people lose their jobs. That's what that money does. It goes to pay for people who have jobs, doing whatever it is they're doing. Whether you agree or you disagree about it, that's going to be a problem. Now, President Obama went to Congress and asked for a 10% increase for the IRS for enforcement. Approximately $350 billion is not collected from U.S. taxpayers or late, and they wanted more money for enforcement, got turned down. And in fact, the Republicans are trying to shrink the IRS budget, which might make some people happy, because then they'd have less people to go out and try and make sure you're actually paying the taxes that you are supposed to pay. But, I can't imagine that this is going to be good. We had a rough week, I have to say, overall, and it's kind of interesting when, stock market started coming down. Remember, it was 12,600, now it's 11,900. It's come down about, 500 or 600 points, which is not even really a 0.5%. I mean, we're not talking about any big numbers yet. But if you look at the latest weekly reading by the American Association of Individual Investors, about 47% of its members are negative on the economy or negative on the stock market. About 28% are on the fence, and a meager 25%-ish are bullish. And that is the skimpiest tally of bulls since August of 2010, when the stock market was in the middle of pulling out of this prolonged funk. But it's kind of interesting because if the bulls are normally really bullish, you know, stock market investors are kind of like real estate agents. They're always really, you know, excited and happy about the prospects of the future. But you're looking at the bearish contingency, right, if you look at the investors' intelligence, and the number of people who are bearish had been hovering at 16% a month ago, now is up to 22%. So there's all these very serious problems with the economy, right? And there's all kinds of problems going on internationally, right? Greece is on the teetering on the brink of default. That's scaring some people. We're looking at Portugal, Spain, Ireland, and Italy not being so great. This week I saw a headline maybe in the Wall Street Journal that said that China's real estate bubble was popping. That's terrifying for all kinds of people. And, of course, we now have, like, I don't know how many wars going on in the Middle East. So there are plenty of things to be bearish about, but when investors get bearish, then everybody starts to pile on and think, oh, my God, something's going to happen to the stock market. But in Barron's this week, it's sort of interesting because they're kind of bearish. Alan Abelson is anyway. He's kind of bearish overall. But he was saying that, you know, bull markets rarely go kaput when everybody is sort of even paying lip service to the need for caution. And so if you have all of these people going, uh-oh, the end is coming, the end is coming, the end almost never comes. But still, regardless, really tough week for the economy. And I have to say, just overall, wish more people were getting good jobs. 404-872-0750. You have a great story coming up in a little while about a $230,000 guard dog. I don't know how much you paid for your last dog. I bet you didn't pay this much. And I'll tell you a little bit about that coming up. Very, very funny story. Well, it's funny for me. Maybe not for the guy who bought the dog. 404-872-0750. Let us go to the phones. 13 minutes past the hour. Steve joins us on the line from Colorado. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Elise.
What can I do for you today?
Well, we are in a crisis here, trying to get a loan modification, and we've been involved in this now for 3 years, going strong. And
you've been trying to get a loan mod for 3 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
So originally, when we applied for the first one back in '09, we weren't in default. We were current with our payments, and we were given a loan mod. And they gave us the terms, and they gave us a monthly mortgage payment. And
did they give you a permanent loan mod or a temporary loan mod?
Well, you see, this is the thing. We never got a contract.
Okay.
And we kept calling and calling, and they kept telling us, relax, don't worry, it's coming.
Okay, so you fell into the hole that millions of other Americans fell into, thinking that the temporary loan modification you were given was actually a permanent one. You believed what you were told, and now suddenly you're 3 years, 4 years, 3 years behind in your loans because you were paying less than you were supposed to, and you were reported as not paying in full, so your credit is trash.
Well, exactly, and also what had happened was originally what they had said was, we have great news, you have this loan mod, but they were bought out. The original lender was bought out by another bank, okay, and in that six-month interim, they took it over and put us in a trial period,
mm-hmm.
okay, and that went on for 9 months.
Yep.
And we successfully paid each month the amount of money that they told us to pay.
Right.
And then finally was denied. Now, what I want to know is, and this is where I keep coming from, why can't we get that original loan modification back? And if we were put into a trial period and we did successfully complete it, why aren't we given a permanent loan modification?
Okay, so let me start at the top. The reason you can't get the original trial, you were never in a permanent loan mod, you were in a trial. The federal government has just sanctioned the four top lenders, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citibank, and I forgot who the last one is. All the four
Chase,
thank you. And they just sanctioned them for basically screwing this up royally.
Right.
And they withheld like $24 million in incentive pay for them. Ocwen was cited but said that they weren't egregious enough to withhold payments yet. You can't get your original loan mod because you never had one. And the way that the trial loan mods worked is that you were told that if you made three on-time payments, you'd get it as a permanent, but that was a lie. It was completely fake. They never did it. And they claimed later they never said they did it. But President Obama came out and he said that that's what would happen, and it didn't happen. Because the government did not force the lenders to do this.
Exactly.
So you don't get that loan mod because you didn't fall into whatever parameters they ultimately decided again, and you didn't fall into those. And so this whole program turns out to be voluntary, rife with mistakes. It's the flip side of the foreclosure crisis, where the banks basically hired people who lied under oath on their little affidavits.
Or are they above
There's
that?
Nobody's accountable. Nobody is accountable.
Well, now here's where
it's egregious.
Here's where it gets even more complicated.
Yep.
They sent us out an incentive package saying that if you go to a short sale, we will give you X amount of dollars and wipe out any money that is debt. It comes to close to $100,000. Now, right now, because we were kind of concerned seeing that we got refused again on another loan mod application, that we weren't going to, you know, get it, and that foreclosure was really staring us in the face. So we went for the short sale program.
Mm-hmm.
So now, why would they rather, and I mean, I can answer this question because they want their money, but they're forcing us out of the house. We don't want to go out. So what is our recourse? How do we stay in our home? We can afford this, but yet they tell us we can't.
What can you afford?
I mean, we've been here for 17 years, and they would rather boot us out the door, bring in somebody new, and ultimately, well, they'll probably make a mortgage with a different lender, but the payments are going to be pretty much the same as we're paying right now. So I don't understand. Why are they forcing us out the door?
I have no idea.
And how do we stay?
You can't.
Oh, so in other words, you're saying that it's...
I'm saying that if you sign this paper and you do a short sale and they wipe out $100,000 of your debt, which, by the way, will not come back to haunt you, thankfully, with the IRS.
Right.
And hopefully you only have one mortgage and not a short sale, a second, because that could really hurt. But let's just assume you have the one. You can't come back from this. You have to go with your credit in tatters, and you have to leave this house that you love, that you've been in for 17 years, and you're going to have to start a new life with your plan B. And you can't. The only way you can, and the only way you can save this house is if you scrape together all the money that you owe them, and all the fees and everything else, and pay them,
right.
And then you can stay.
Right. Now there's one alternative. There's a convention going on here in town today, and you probably know who they are. I won't mention their name.
What, is Naka in town?
Pardon me?
Naka? Who's in town today?
Yes, that's who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to get down there and, try to raise a little hell, to see what we could do. And, again, I'm coming, trying to get that original loan mod back or that trial period.
You're not going to get that back.
It's useless.
Steve, you're not going to get that back.
I don't even see even going to this convention that it's going to help us.
I don't think NACA helps very many people. They cherry pick the ones they can help so they get their fee, but I don't think this is a lot of PR show and it raises their profile. But honestly, if they help the 40,000 people who show up at these things all over the country, there would be a lot better numbers for loan modifications.
Right.
There aren't better numbers for loan modifications. 600,000 people out of 5 million have gotten their loans mod, and it's not really doing anything.
Well,
so you can go down there. Maybe you'll be a lucky one.
I mean, is there any a large group or any people out there trying to,
the only people who really...
What the bank is pulling right now to try to, to save, because they're melting the country down in the way that I see it.
They are, but no, there is nobody. The only place you can go that I think has provided any real sort of help is the Hope for Homeowners Hotline. It's staffed by HUD-certified housing counselors. Their funding just got slashed. The funding for all of the national consumer credit organizations got slashed. But you can call them at 888-995-HOPE, and they have backdoor channels, and maybe they'll be able to get your lender on the phone. The other thing you can do is you can file a complaint with helpwithmybank.gov. Helpwithmybank.gov. You have one of the big lenders. They're overseen by the OCC. This is the website for the OCC to lodge your complaint. You can file an appeal. You should say what is happening to you and what has happened to you. And hopefully one of their people will take a look at it. They're supposed to, but it can take up to 6 more months. And redress? You might as well just file a lawsuit. Or there are some, if you go to my website, here's a better place also to go, a third option, moneywatch.com. I write the home equity blog. Just go to moneywatch.com and type in loan modification hell at the top in the search bar, and I have 30 posts that will pop up. And your lender is well represented by a lot of the people who write to me, and they should be able, you might be able to get some additional information and help and resources just because 3,000 people have left comments on these posts trying to help each other. 22 minutes past the hour. I'm Elyse Glink. You're listening to The Elyse Glink Show. 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
7 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. So it's graduation season, and the college kids are all coming home. And so what did the speeches that were given at graduation this year focus on? The New York Times this morning did a look at the word usage at private schools, public schools, military, and religious schools. And they found that most of the speakers talked about things like the world, their life and how to live it, job and career and work, love and passion. There was a whole bunch of stuff on nation and fear and change. Tom Hanks told graduates that the cheap commodity of fear threatens the faith in American ideas. Love and passion were big. Jonathan Franzen, the author, told graduates, I think at Kenyon College, that it was easy to like, but loving is very difficult. You even had Google's first female engineer speaking about how studying science and learning how to think was so important. And what do you think was the smallest number of mentions? Economy and money. Really, folks? Economy and money. I guess only war was mentioned less than the economy. I just don't get it. Money and the economy, it's all about what you have to do in the real world. But I guess it's just not as much fun as talking about, I don't know. Former President Clinton spoke about an interconnected but unequal world, and Mr. Ballmer of Microsoft stressed the importance of passion and tenacity. So much fun. So little emphasis on money, always. We're going to talk about a guard dog that costs a whole lot of money, $230,000, next on Newstalk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
37 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Happy Sunday. We are at 404-872-0750, online all the time. Thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out my Money Watch blog for the loan modification stuff we were just talking about, and also the Equifax personal finance blog, where we talk about all kinds of great topics on the five pillars of personal finance: credit, tax, insurance, investing, and of course real estate. Equifax.com/blog, and I will talk a little bit about some of those topics later on today. Mark Titel of GetOutStartOver.com is going to be in. I had a little story myself about this week, about short sales and whether they're really priced right. He's got some thoughts about that and some other things going on in the office. So for the on-the-ground short sale and foreclosure report, Mark Titel, GetOutStartOver.com. He'll be buying a little bit. So let's turn our attention to dogs. It's funny because I'm not a dog person. I'm going to just say that straight up. When I met my husband, Sam, his mother had a dog, one of the dogs of his childhood, a dog named Trito. And Trito honestly had the worst breath in the universe. He was an old dog, a cute little dog. But honestly, if you're not a dog person, you're not a dog person. Anyway, but one of the things that would come up when I was writing about real estate, of course, some people would say, well, I need a dog for protection. Or what do you think about having like just a barking dog sound on some sort of a recording device? So if somebody tried to break in, this would go off and they'd be afraid and they'd run away. I'm like, great idea. But for people who really want a guard dog, I mean, it's hard to find a really well-trained guard dog. And there are all kinds of guard dog shows. We had the Dog Whisperer show, and with that show with the British woman who, you know, trains the dogs in 6 minutes, which is really, I always found that show to be totally fascinating. Wishing I could train my children in 6 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. But it's gone to a whole new level. I had no idea. I mean, sometimes I am so out of touch. Front page of the New York Times today. Just don't call her a guard dog. The headline for the executive with everything, a $230,000 dog to protect it. But of course, why not spend $250,000 on a guard dog? They're not called guard dogs when they're this expensive, folks. They're called executive protection dogs. This dog named Julia is a 3-year-old German shepherd who commutes by private jet, according to the New York Times, between a Minnesota estate and a home in Arizona. And she comes from a company called Harrison Canine Security Services in Aiken, South Carolina, where her brothers and sisters have been used in elite military units like the Navy SEAL Team 6, which got all kinds of publicity as being the raid, the people that launched the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. But he doesn't, the guy who owns this, Harrison Prather, doesn't, I mean, he does do, you know, special SEAL, Navy SEAL Team 6 stuff now and for other British security services and all that. But the people who are really funding the growth of his business are the ones who are looking for dogs in a much higher price point. Moguls and celebrities, he said, now routinely pay $40,000 to $60,000 for a well-bred German Shepherd that is certified as an expert in the sport of Schusshund, which I guess is German for protection dog. These dogs speak German. Maybe that's why the price is so high. So, and this dog, particularly Julia, not only speaks German, but has won awards. And so the price went up above the $60,000 mark to $230,000. It's so interesting, the idea that you can have a dog, a guard dog, and I think the person who has this dog has a whole bunch of dogs like this. And really what they're trying to do is meet demand. And it's kind of interesting, this idea, and it takes me back to something that Nicholas Kristof wrote in the New York Times. He's one of the columnists, and he travels the world, third world nations particularly. And he was saying how, in some ways, he feels like where we're going is kind of the way, now he wrote this, that Pakistan is going, because, or Mexico, where instead of putting money into police forces, right, police services, people just get armed security forces, personal security forces, or they buy guard dogs. Instead of investing in public schools, they invest in private schools. And so it's kind of interesting, this idea that people would pay $250,000 or $400,000 or $60,000 or $50,000 to protect their family, to protect the property from, you know, who knows what. Now, I totally get that there are people who are stalked. There are, you know, people, it's something that I always worry about. You know, I'm sure that Neil Bortz and Clark Howard think about it once, you know, now and again. And you do have to get worried. I just don't know if a dog is the right answer. It wouldn't be for me because I don't know how to take care of a dog. But, you know, it's kind of interesting, this idea that the price point has just jumped up so much. And we're talking about people who routinely pay, and this I do know, people who routinely pay for, like, say, a Portuguese water dog, $2,500. And then, by the way, that it's not just that. You then have all the other stuff, the vet fees and the training fees and all the other stuff that goes on top of it. So, anyway, it's just kind of interesting. But the story, I'm going to put a link to it on today's blog because I just think it's such an interesting story about how these prices have skyrocketed and the perceived value of protection, which is so very interesting to me. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. 43 minutes past the hour. TC joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, TC. Welcome to the show.
How are you, Elise?
You know, I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Sure.
I just got something I want to run past you. I'm 30 years old, and I'm divorced with a 3-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm turning 30 here in the summer, so I haven't really, I'm trying to figure out what I need to do for retirement. I haven't really been that proactive, and I realize now that I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of a two-part question. What do I need? I don't have tons of debt. What do I need to do in terms of retirement? What should I be doing actively now? And also, what type of life insurance do I need?
Okay. So, first of all, do you have any life insurance?
Yes, ma'am. I just recently, kind of purchased something through a credit union that I'm a member of.
What did you purchase, a whole life policy or a term?
Yes, ma'am. It's a whole life policy. I believe it's around 300 something thousand, and it's $135 a month. And I think that may be a little high, but I'm not quite sure what is really what I need to be looking at for my needs.
You know, the first thing to think about it, and again, protection is all about, guard dogs aside, when you're protecting a three-year-old, your three-year-old daughter is going to need protection, financial protection, probably through the time she's 23 or 24, assuming, she gets through college and you want to help her get started a little bit. And so you've got at least a 20 to 25-year window ahead of you. I think what you should do is purchase a term life policy for a significant amount of money. You're young, and so that will be inexpensive for you. Maybe you'd spend $500 or $600 a year, and you'd get $1 million policy.
Okay.
And $1 million sounds like a lot of money, but in 25 years, it may not be. And you can pretty much bet that the Georgia Hope Scholarship is going to be diminished somehow.
Right.
So you're probably going to have college to pay for, and there'll be other kinds of expenses for her to pay for. And if you die, somebody's going to have to put up some money for that. And so I would think that you would probably want to fund that. And since you're so young and you can do it, fix the amount, you do a 25-year term policy, and it takes her all the way until she's 28. And at 28, you hope that she's on her own, and you have enough other kinds of retirement protection for yourself. And so let's talk about that, because now with the $1 million policy and you've got this whole life policy for $300,000, not sure I would have done that, but it's not an terribly huge expense.
Well, I can always cancel it, right?
Yeah, you can. You'll just lose whatever you put in. No problem. Okay. You have to decide.
So I've only had it for about a month, so
this is not a big deal.
Right.
So you have to think about you have to think about how much money your daughter will need should you die. Because what you do is, it's not really so much like if you die when she's 25 and she's through college and graduate school and out on her own and you still have 3 years left to your policy and she'll end up with $1 million, that's probably plenty of money. But if you die next year and she has 20-odd years to go, $1 million does not go that far to providing support for 22 years.
Well, and I was thinking, too, that, her mother and I get along well, but she's got, she's got she has a responsibility to help a little bit, too, but I just want to make sure that she's not completely burdened if I had an untimely, death or something like that.
Well, that will go a long way. So you have to, I just want you to think about what your obligation is under your divorce agreement.
Sure.
And then what else you want to leave for your daughter. That's what you try and do with figuring out life insurance. And maybe the right number isn't $1 million, maybe it's $2 million. I don't know what your situation is or what your daughter's situation is. If she were special needs and you already knew that at age 3, you'd want more, not less, and you're young, and so you could, and you'd want it for the rest of her life, and so then you'd want to set up a very different kind of a special needs trust, and you'd want to fund it with some sort of different kind of life insurance policy.
Okay.
So you have to think about who your daughter is and what her needs are and how you're going to meet those needs.
Okay.
So for your retirement, I would really like to see you max. Well, let me just start by saying I'd like to see you try and put away anywhere from 15% to 25% of your gross annual income.
Okay.
So whether you do
is that on top of the 401k
including your 401k.
Okay. Okay.
So if you're putting away, let's say, $16,000 in your 401k, and let's just for ease of numbers on a Sunday morning say that you make $100,000 a year, and that's 16% of it, you're well on your way.
And that's about what I make. My company match, I think. So if I said, okay, they do 7%, so I'll do 7% there, and then I do a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA where I can max out, I think, at what, $6,000 a year?
$5,000 because you're under the age of 50.
Okay.
But, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Perfect.
Okay, so, and I just want to add that up to 25% of my gross annual pay.
If you can do that at, right now when you're 30, from 30 to 40 even, and even if it reduces, because let's say you get married, you have another kid, you have another family, and that reduces after that, but you have 10 solid years of putting that kind of money together, you're going to be in great shape when you're 70.
Really? Okay, because yeah. I've been feeling pretty down because I'm 30 and I really... I don't live paycheck to paycheck, but if I had a big medical catastrophe or whatever, I mean, I could be wiped out, so...
Well, do you not have medical insurance?
I do, but I'm just saying, you know, if I had some sort of a, you know, I don't have a $30,000 rainy day fund yet.
Okay, well, you need to have that, too. And you need to figure out, you know, you should get rid of all of your debt except maybe house debt if you own property.
Okay.
So, and try, you know, things that you can do that will make a big impact down the line. Never get a car loan if you can help it.
Okay.
Buy a new car, keep it, you know, try to get as low a short a term as possible on your car loan. So 3 years, try to pay that off in 18 months. And then keep the car for 10 to 12 years. Just doing that one thing will probably save you an extra $100,000 to $150,000 over your lifetime if you just do that. So there are some serious ways, everyday money decisions that you can do, that you can implement, that will save you big time over the next 40 years until you turn 70. Because if you think about it that way, you'll have four cars in you, or three cars in you, ideally, over the next 40 years.
Okay.
And so
you think I should be positive about, I mean, not that I should be a downer, but you think I'm going to be okay where I'm sitting now if I will implement these things that you said I'll be okay when I retire at the age of 70?
You're going to be more than okay. Your daughter's
okay.
Going to be protected. You're going to have a huge, you know, cash, amount of cash just sitting there waiting for you to decide what to do. I mean, you're likely going to live to be into your 90s. That's 60 years from now. You're probably going to work into your 70s. Maybe not full-time doing whatever it is you're doing today, but you may find some other different kind of option, or you may start a company, or you may do something on the side or consult or whatever you're going to do. And so you're going to have income coming in to supplement all this other stuff. You're going to be well prepared with a 401k and a Roth IRA, and you'll have made savings a priority, because let's say you get that car loan, and when you get it paid off, you're still used to paying $500 a month toward it, and you're just going to keep paying yourself that right into your savings account, and you're going to buy the next car with cash, but you're going to be used to saving that money.
Right.
And when you're used to saving that money, it becomes a game. And I think you're going to find that there are going to be an incredible number of options available to you, and you're going to say to yourself, wow, this stuff really works. It really accumulates. And there's no better feeling than knowing that you have properly prepared for your life, for whatever happens. And let me tell you something, great recessions will come again. Hopefully not for another 20 or 30 years, but they will come again. 52 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show, 404-872-0750. Don't forget to check out today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We've got news, weather, and traffic coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glenk on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show. Thanks for joining us this week. Our number 404-872-0750. Online all the time. ThinkGlenk.com. Don't forget to check out the Equifax personal finance blog, Equifax.com/BLOG. Citigroup disclosed this week that the names, account numbers, and email addresses of 200,000 credit card customers were stolen. Crazy. And it strikes at just the way that we pay for everything these days. Groceries and power bills and insurance and technology, utilities. In the last 3 months, we also had 100 million Sony PlayStation accounts hacked, the networks of Lockheed Martin hacked, and the customer email database of the company that does marketing for Best Buy and Target. But half of all Americans, 154 million people, have a credit card, and the Citi attack is a reminder that even that level of technology can be breached. Citi says that all the customers whose information was stolen got a notification letter. Most of them will get a new credit card. It has declined to say exactly how many victims there were. But federal law, remember, protects credit card customers from fraud beyond $50. And in most cases, the bank that issues that card will even, cover that as well. Citi hackers did not get the three-digit code that appears on the back of the card. That's the CVV code. So they probably won't be able to make direct charges. But be sure to check your account if you have a Citi account and watch for a letter. I'm Elyse Glang, 404-872-0750. We're going to take more of your calls next on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
It's live, experts, money, and real estate advice every Sunday. Elyse Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB, brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Flink. Thanks for joining us this week. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. I wanted to roll back the clock all the way to, last week, and talk a little bit more about the S&P Case-Shiller Index, where we had an announcement that home values had fallen all the way back to where they were in 2002. Last week we talked in the show about how they'd actually in Atlanta fallen back to really 1998 to 1999. And in some cases we had people call in and say, even worse than that, I feel like I am where I was back 20 years ago or 22 years ago in 1989. On my real estate blog, on the Equifax personal finance blog, I talked a little bit about housing market predictions and how home values were continuing to sink. And then this week we had, and I thought this was just absolutely amazing, we had Professor Robert Shiller of Case-Shiller Index talk about how he actually thinks, or he wouldn't be surprised if home value sank another 10 to 25%. And then he immediately said, that's not a forecast. Why is it that people say stuff that looks and sounds like a forecast and acts like a forecast, but isn't the forecast? I don't know. I have to just say, though, that if you end up having home values fall another 10 to 25%, and maybe it's just concentrated in the top 10 foreclosure markets, and that's what he's looking at, I don't know why he would say something like that if it's not a forecast. That he wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened. I'm not sure what he expected to have happen. Sometimes I think he says this stuff because of, his other business interests, but I don't know. So, seriously, it's just a little bit of a concern, though, because if you look out and you think about your home value now being somewhere around 1998 to 1999, moving another 10% to 25% down in Atlanta would bring prices back to, I think, where they were in the early 80s. I'm not sure I would have to look and see. But it's really somewhat frightening and very, very much of a concern. So I talked a little bit about the idea that it could fall that much and what you can do about it. And this is where another piece that I wrote this week that I think is really important on how the real estate market has changed. Money Watch decided to do a package on why now is the best time to buy a house. And so they asked me to write a couple of pieces for it. And I did. I wrote something called Five Top Turnaround Towns, which are on Money Watch this week. I'm going to put links to all this stuff up on today's blog. I'm actually well on top of the blog. I've been blogging during all the show breaks today. We did this whole piece because if you look at mortgage interest rates, they fell again a little bit this week. And so you're looking at a 30-year fixed rate loan of somewhere like under 4.5% if you have the best credit, and the bank approves you, two big ifs, admittedly. But a 15-year loan is still, you can still get that for under 4%. I mean, this is just ridiculously low. I mean, it's like free money. So you've got incredibly low interest rates. You've got home values dropping. How is this not the best time, maybe in your whole lifetime, to buy property? Maybe start buying property as an investor, or for sure, you know, if you can get rid of your own house, or maybe you don't have one. What we're seeing is, even though household formation has collapsed, right? And you're seeing the number of households created shrink to some ridiculously low number. Like, if normally 1 million to 1.5 million new households are created every year in this country, last year, over the last few years, we've seen only 400,000 new households created each year. I mean, demand has really collapsed. And people are saying, well, eventually that's going to come back, and it's going to come back in spades. And I'm not so sure how fast that's going to come back. Just like I'm not sure how fast home values are going to come back. But what I am pretty sure about is, if you buy a property and you plan to keep it for anywhere between 5 and 10 years, preferably 7 and 10 years, you're going to be fine, because you're buying at an incredibly advantageous price. And I am starting to hear all kinds of things about how interest rates are going up. And in fact, on Money Watch this week, I'm going to be writing about interviewed somebody who believes that mortgage interest rates are going to take a big 3.5% jump, like, overnight. I don't think that's very likely, but that's his point of view. We're going to present it. But really important to think about where you are in your life, what kind of cash you have, what do you want to do going forward, and how, if any real estate plays a part in that financial future that you have. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phone lines. Bob joins us on the line from Cartersville. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
I'm trying to figure out whether or not to pay off our house.
Okay.
We are going to get an insurance check probably in the next week or two. And I'm thinking, I'm not a big fan of the market right now. I'm thinking a better choice for the money might just be to pay the house off.
Okay. And what are you getting the insurance check for?
Our boat sank.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I hope everybody was okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Coast Guard again. They came and lifted me out of the water, so.
Okay. So,
but,
I think, what's your interest rate in your loan, and how much do you have left?
It's 4.65, and we have $200,000 left on it.
And what kind of other cash do you have on hand?
Probably have about a little over 150 in investments, and that's it. We have zero debt other than the house.
So you have 150,000 in investments. Any cash, emergency cash, any retirement money?
That is the retirement money.
Okay, and so any other cash on hand?
Probably about 12,000 in just cash in the brokerage account. And the rest of it's in IRAs.
Okay.
And 403B.
And you have a significant amount in 401K or IRA and 403Bs?
No, that's it. That's what I was talking
about. That's it. Okay, so I'm going to say that even though it would feel really good to pay off your loan, I don't think I would put $200,000 into your house just now. Because what's your monthly payment on that house? It can't be very much.
It's $1,500.
Yeah. So what you're really talking about is $18,000 a year that you're going to be able to save by paying off that amount, which is okay. It's a very good amount. But I'm not sure, and maybe you have better use for that $18,000, but I almost wish you would just take $100,000 of it and pay it off, and then whatever you're paying is going to go a lot further towards getting rid of that loan. It'll pay it off in a very short, relatively short period of time. But your interest rate is really low.
Right.
And this way, you're able to have another $100,000 in cash just in case something else comes up, like there's another investment opportunity. Because I don't know that, I don't know what's going to happen with the stock market, but if the stock market falls 20-25% in the next 6 months, are you going to feel like it's a better investment? And I think the answer would probably be yes. So you'd have $100,000 in cash just sitting there that you could use to invest in a diversified portfolio of index funds, let's say.
Well, my game plan was we're still putting $1,000 a month in the Roth. I was just going to increase it to put $1,000 in the Roth and just $1,000 just in the brokerage account, different accounts for that.
Yeah, I understand, but that's only, that's $24,000 a year. And in 4 years, but if the opportunity presents itself sooner, you've got another $100,000 that you have the ability to invest. right?
Okay.
Now, let's say that the stock market doesn't go anywhere, right? And you decide, you know, in another year or two that you just really want to pay it off. You can pay it off at that point. You haven't lost very much. Because after you put down another $100,000 to pay off that loan, virtually every cent you put down is just paying off principal.
Okay.
Your interest is going to basically go away on that loan. And so you've given yourself some options and opportunities. You're not really losing anything. You're just doing half now and half after you see where things go. And you can still decide then if you think that's the best use of that money. But in the meantime, you've given yourself a very substantial cash cushion just in case you find a better investment.
Yeah.
And I like that idea.
Okay.
All right?
All right. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bob. Thanks for calling the show. 16 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Prize pack coming up in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned for that. Betty joins us on the line from Fayetteville. Hi, Betty.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
I am in a really a financial bind. Like, I have been trying to look for a job for the past year, and I'm also enrolled in school.
Mm-hmm.
But, I had enrolled for a Pell Grant, and now the school is saying that, because I had enrolled for the school previously, it hadn't been successful, that,
What do you mean successful?
That I haven't made satisfactory progress in my studies.
Uh-huh. Why? Are you not passing classes? Are you not enrolling in the right classes or what?
No. Actually, I have enrolled in the right classes, but, because I withdrew previous years, around 2007 and 2008, 2009, because I withdrew with the WF, it knocks off my GPA.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I really wasn't on top and on serious, as serious as school, as serious about school as I am now.
Yeah.
And it's really hurting the fact that, I may not get a Pell Grant. So, I'm just kind of, I'm 28, I'm single, I have no kids. I don't know how I'm going to support myself besides, in going out and getting a job. I mean, I have been trying to do that as well. I really feel like I've been trying to do everything that I can, and, I'm really stuck, and I don't know how to, and I really hate to go back to my parents and ask them to support me for another fiscal year, because I will be 28 in July. So,
I'm not quite sure what you're asking me. Are you asking me if you don't qualify for a Pell Grant because you're not making progress? I mean, that's part of what you're supposed to be doing. Then you have the option of other kinds of student loans, but they're not grants, they're loans.
Right.
So you may have to sign on for some, for a student loan so that you can go back and prove that you're serious about school. You may also have to transfer to a community college. I don't know where you're enrolled, somewhere less expensive.
Well, I am enrolled in a community college, and I was offered a Pell Grant. And, I had heard in the past that a Pell Grant, a grant cannot be subject to, to the rules of a loan or stuff like that, that's what I believe. But I guess now it's subject to it,
What I think you need to do is you need to go and talk to the folks in the financial department of the school that you're going to and try and figure out what your options and opportunities are. And if you make certain grades and pull your grade point up, will you then be offered a grant again? And try and do what you can to figure out how to make this work for yourself. I mean, it's hard. You got yourself into quite the pickle because you weren't serious about the opportunities that you had before, and now you are, and you're probably going to have to work twice as hard to figure it out. But one lesson you're learning is that there's just no free handouts anymore. Everything has gotten just very tight and tough in this country. It's going to get even more so, and I think the opportunity to finish your education is a really important one. So go back to school, sit with the financial aid officers, figure out what your options and opportunities are. I'm glad you're a grown-up. You're not asking your parents for help. I know there is a way for you to make this work, even if you have to do it slowly and over a longer period of time. And I know if you try hard, you will be able to find some sort of job. Maybe there's a job at the school. Maybe there's a job through a professor at the school in the area of expertise so that you can be working and gaining experience and maybe defraying some of those costs. Get resourceful. Figure it out. There is no other way that you're going to be able to get your education. But I am thrilled to hear you're finally serious about it. At 28, it's time. 21 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with a prize pack on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com. And find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, we have our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value, $199. It includes a maintenance agreement for two complete HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating, a Lakewood 400's Antiques Market $25 gift certificate, and an Auto Bell Car Wash $25 gift card. All this, $199, can be yours if you are the fifth caller today. 404-741-0750. Be nice to Clint. He is the one who's answering your call. We have a whole bunch of people that we're going to talk to coming up in just a moment, but I wanted to share an email I just got from somebody listening to the show named Bill. He said he's a libertarian and listening to me in WSB and was amazed that a smart girl could drink the Jewish Obama Kool-Aid. A reference to my being Jewish, I suppose. He says that I have glossed over the fact that Obama lied when he promised to fix foreclosures. Everything he has promised is lies. I blame the Republican for blocking the expansion of the IRS when I know it's a power grab to expand his police powers for bigger government. And you know we have enough IRS agents, blah, blah, blah. You know what, Bill? I got to tell you, I don't think I've drunk any Kool-Aid. Last week, I totally went off in the federal government. I've been consistent about calling the loan modification system a complete failure from ground zero. But you know what? I call it like it is on both sides. I think all of people in the government are not working particularly well. And I think it's people who don't live on Wall Street and don't live in Washington, D.C. that are suffering. Everybody in Georgia is suffering right now. And I think it's not even, it's apolitical because it's all of the politicians. But, you know, I don't really talk that much about politics. I'm all about the money. 27 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We're taking your calls next on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us this Sunday. 404-872-0750. We've got Mark Titel coming in from GetOutStartOver.com in just a moment. Really interesting thing happened with my mother this week, who's a real estate agent in Chicago, about a property in her apartment building that she wanted to buy. Mark and I are going to discuss that and what else is happening in his office regarding short sales and foreclosures. That'll be coming up at about 51 minutes past the hour, I think. 36 minutes past the hour now. Let's go back to the phones. Michelle joins us on the line from Buford. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's going on?
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My dad, about 5 years ago at 62, had a major stroke. He is now, I consider him my third child. He's, you know, he has to have basically all his retirement every month that he worked for goes to cover all his expenses, which I'm very thankful for, because it's about $3,000 or so a month just to maintain that. He has a credit card that has a balance of about $12,000 on it. I have made purchases on it at his request for various things that he's needed, whatever. But what I'm trying to find out is, now that he's on hospice 5 years later, when he passes, am I going to be responsible for this credit card debt?
The answer is probably not. Are you a co-signer of that debt?
No, I'm on his checking account, which it's all through the credit union, so it's all kind of
Okay.
It comes together, but I never signed anything for the credit card.
Okay. First of all, has he benefited from the purchases, or have you benefited?
No, he has benefited from the purchases.
And when he dies, what kind of balance will he or estate will he leave?
There is no estate. There is no money. There is a life insurance policy that currently is dropping $1,260 monthly until it bottoms out in February of next year at roughly $10,000 to $12,000.
Okay. So is he close? Is it hospice, sort of home hospice, and it could be a while, or imminent?
I don't think it's imminent because they've already had to renew it a couple of times.
Okay.
I'm learning more about this stuff than I ever cared to learn about.
I'm sure. I'm so sorry. It's really hard.
It really, really is.
All the stuff and money and the emotions all wrapped up together. You know, my best friend was in hospice last year before he died for a month, and it was just every day. You sort of think to yourself, I'm in some sort of special weird world that nobody else seems to be inhabiting. They look normal out there, but it's not normal for me.
Exactly. And now I know more about Medicare than I ever wanted to know about.
Right. No, it's really scary. Of course, I don't know exactly how everything's going to lay out with him, and you should try to have everything signed over before he dies. But when he dies, you'll have to notify creditors, and they will have 6 months to file a claim against the estate. If there is no estate, none whatsoever, they probably won't try to continue to collect. They won't. And even if they did, they would have to collect against the estate. You would just have to wait. And then as the executor, try to settle those claims. So it could take you 6 months to a year to get everything all settled. But if there is no estate, there's nothing for them to come after. And if you haven't benefited from those credit card charges, it would be really hard for them to claim that somehow you owe that money.
Well, and I was going to ask, too, is there something that upon his death, you know, there will be some money once we bury him or whatever that would be left over? Could I possibly negotiate with him and say, okay, he's passed, I can give you some money?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to them and you say, you guys are the only ones that he owes money to, there's $5,000 left, you want it? And they may say, I'm sure they would say yes.
Okay.
And after making sure somehow that there really isn't anything else hiding, and you'll make some sort of a deal with them, and that'll be the end of it.
Okay.
They may not, though, for $5,000, they may not even want it. Or the amount of money that they have to spend to get that might not be worth it. So, you know, you'll have to probably present some paperwork. But it's good to think about all this stuff now, make sure that all the papers are signed, and that you and your dad know what he wants.
Yeah, we pretty much did all that stuff, you know, 5 years earlier.
Right.
So it's just that there's so much on the table all the time to worry about his, because all his expenses every month pretty much just eat up whatever he's got in retirement.
It's amazing that he's even, and that you're not having to step up and have to, and maybe you are paying for some of those things anyway, like you're giving him shelter or wherever he is.
Well, he's in an assisted living facility,
and that pretty much
eats up everything every month. And so I do feel very blessed that we haven't had to do that, because I have a son that's starting college in the fall. I have a 16-year-old daughter, so we're basically poor from children anyway.
Yeah, you got plenty. You got plenty. It sounds like it's going to be fine. I don't think you're going to have to worry about them coming after you forever. When he does pass, just make sure you get extra copies, order extra copies of the death certificate,
because
you'll have to send that around. And even getting 30 copies, it's inexpensive. Just get it all at once. So it saves you some time later, 30, 40 copies, help you close out all the accounts, send it to the credit card company on all the rest.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Michelle. I'm so sorry it has to be this tough. It's just never easy. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with the calls. Carol joins us on the line. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about I'm hoping you will be able to lead me in the right direction. There is a limited amount of government-funded mortgage money in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that I heard on a news show last week. However, I did not write it down, and I cannot find it via the Internet. For people that have had a drop or loss of income and are trying to hold on to their homes, which is myself, I am hoping that you will direct me somehow to how I can get more information about this limited amount of money. What I do recall is we only have till September to apply for this mortgage money or refinance money, and there was to my recollection, about $100 million available if qualified. Does that ring any bells to you?
You know, I think what you've done is you've misheard. Yeah, I think you've misheard the information. I can't even imagine what this is unless it's something in the state of Pennsylvania.
And I cannot
remember. Did you just call? Do you know what station you were watching? Was it local news?
It was, yes. It was one of the major, ABC or CBS, was one of the major networks. And
but it was local, not national?
No, it was not national,
so
I don't think.
Carol,
but it was a politician urging people that have had, like I said, either a decrease in income or they're struggling to meet their mortgage due to changes of lifestyle living. And this local politician, and I remember the website was at .gov.
Okay, let me stop you. Stop.
Sure.
So there is a website you can go to called makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Okay.
It is national, not local.
Okay.
I would call back to the news organization and talk to either the assignment editor or one of the producers for the evening newscast and try and or find it on their website. Sometimes they put down the rundown on their websites.
Okay.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about, but the Making Home Affordable website is the one that it works with loan modifications.
Yeah,
and
this is
they may have been talking about there was, I don't know if, did you lose your job recently?
I became disabled.
Okay. They're making home affordable has been a colossal failure, but 600,000 people have had their loans modified either through there or through their own lenders. Another, you know, bunch have had their loans modified through their lenders.
Yeah, and I'm trying not to go that route.
Well, I don't know what it is that you think you heard. Nothing's crossed my desk with $300 million, first 30,000 people to apply, get it. I haven't seen anything like that. So I really don't know. But you're in where are you? Pennsylvania. You should call your local station and you should try to track it back that way. And as a news reporter who used to be on television for 9 years, I can tell you that if you can remember who the reporter was, that person is going to be the person who's going to be able to help you try and track back what you're doing. But makinghomeaffordable.gov is a good place to start to see if you qualify for something. And if you do need a loan modification, the very best place to go is either directly to your lender or to the Hope for Homeowners hotline, 888-995-HOPE. And they have backdoor channels where they can get in touch with your lender and try and work with them to help solve this problem. But I wish I could say I knew exactly what it was that you had heard, but honestly, I really don't. It is 45 minutes past the hour in the Elise Glenk Show. Jay joins us on the line. Hi, Jay. How can I help you today?
Hey, Elise. How you doing? Hey, I got a question for you that I want to see if it's possible. I have $45,000 sitting in a secure 401k fund. It's with T. Rowe Price that has, it's a very, very safe. It doesn't go up and it doesn't go down. It's just kind of a safe haven for
the
money.
Are you working for the company that currently has the 401k?
No, this is the second one. I'm currently working, it's got a 401k with the company I'm with and funding it continuously and everything else. This 401k is from a company I used to work with, and once I left the job, I transferred it over to T. Rowe Price, and I think it's called their Summit Fund. And
okay, so it's not really a 401k anymore. Now it's an IRA.
Okay.
Because it's not with the company. You would have had to have transferred it into an IRA account, a qualified IRA, right? Still tax-deductible, tax-deferred, but it's in this account. And you've got it invested in a particular index fund. Okay, and your question is what?
Right. My question is can I invest that money or tie it? I know I can buy stocks on the stock market through it because I've done that already. But I wanted to see if I could tie it to real estate.
So the only opportunities for you in an IRA, a regular IRA, is to invest in a REIT, a real estate investment trust. And that's a whole interesting class of investment that is real estate based. And there's a lot of things to learn about. And you can go to REIT.com, REIT, I think it's REIT.com, or NAREIT.org. National Association of Real Estate Investment Trusts has an investor section that explains REITs. If you're looking to buy a house, you're going to have to roll that money directly into a self-directed IRA, which T. Rowe Price doesn't do. You need a company like Entrust or some of these other self-directed IRAs. And then you can actually buy investment property, whether it's a commercial building, an office building, strip mall, a house you're going to rent out. Can't use it for personal use, and you can't rent it out to your family members, but you can invest in rental property. But you need a different kind of an account. And there's a whole lot of information actually on my website at thinklink.com. If you just look under investment real estate, that should be able to give you a little bit of background on this. I also held our How to Invest in Real Estate event about a year ago. I don't remember when we held it. Last October, I think. And anyway, that event you can buy, if you go to the thinklink.com store, you can actually buy the podcast from the guy who is from Entrust and listen to how he describes self-directed IRAs and what you can do with them and what you cannot do with them, and other information. We have, I think, an ebook that covers that, investing in real estate. So those would be places to go to get more information. It's 48 minutes past the hour. We have news, weather, and traffic coming up. This week in the Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution, there's a special report that examines the safety of your hospital stay. Mark Titel of GetOutStartOver.com is here. We're going to be talking about short sales and foreclosures 12 minutes before the hour on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
54 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. So glad you could join us today. We have in the studio Mark Titel. Mark is with GetOutStartOver.com. He reports weekly on what's going on with foreclosures and short sales in the Atlanta market. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Nice to have you. So, I was talking to you a little bit offline this morning about my mother, and she had this funny situation. She called and she said, I think I found an apartment I want to buy. Now, she's a longtime, very successful real estate broker. She really understands what values are. And she saw in the building that she lives in Chicago that one of the units that should sell for, let's say, $700,000 was listed for $400,000. And my husband, Sam, who everybody knows is a real estate attorney, said to her, Sue, it's probably a short sale and it's probably not a real thing. Because what he has noticed is that agents who are trying to get some excitement, generate some interest in the property, will just sort of offer a property at this insane lowball price just to test and see if the bank is willing to accept any sort of offer that comes through the door. What do you think is really going on there?
Well, it is really about the strategy on how to do the short sale and how to help the particular seller who's probably insolvent or in a tough situation. Imagine this. Let's say today, June 12th, the seller comes to your office and says to you, on July 5th, they're going to foreclose on me unless I find the solution, do the short sale. So the real estate broker now is challenged to make sure that he puts it on the market, finds the buyer, and sends the offer to the bank so he can get an answer from the bank at what price they will allow to sell.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot just pick up the phone and call the bank and say, hey, what price should we list this home at and what will you accept so we can find the buyer? They will not even talk to you unless you deliver the offer. So here it is, the listing agent now has to decide at what price we're going to list this home so we can quickly generate an offer and get engaged in the conversation with the short lender.
But, you know, Sam says that it would never go for $400,000 if everything else in the building is selling at $700,000, right?
Absolutely. So what you have to do is look at the fair market value of this property today, and you can price it at the lower end of that fair market value, but not $300,000 below the market value. That obviously is a dream, but never going to be accomplished for anybody.
So you think that that's just something that the broker is doing to try and generate some fast interest?
Yes, or maybe just to win the strategically to make sure that the foreclosure stops, that they are actually entering in some kind of forbearance program, that they will allow the seller for another 2-3 months to generate a real short sale offer. So that may be strategically justifiable, but it is so painful on the other end because any buyer and any buyer's agent will get upset that they are just fooling around of something that has no chance of closing ever.
Yeah, that's. I think that's kind of what's happening, or at least what Sam is saying. Are you seeing that happen, you know, where you are? I mean, we know that CoreLogic came out this week or last week, 35% of all real estate sales are now REO or short sales, meaning foreclosures or short sales. What else are you seeing out there?
Absolutely. Not only that it is 35% nationally, but here locally, we have about 46% of all the listings on the market are foreclosures and short sales. So we have this huge amount of inventory that is selling below market price. Now, the only advantage with the short sales is that eventually, and that's the same numbers from CoreLogic, that they're going to get sold for much higher than the foreclosures would. So to speak, it's only 13% of sales price will be discounted in a short sale, where foreclosures discounting about 30 or 40% of the sales price.
Wow. So there's really just a lot of difference going on there. One best tip for everybody. We're running a little bit short of time.
If you need to sell your home, you have to sell your home. Put on the market quickly so you can get more money, because in a year or two, it's going to be less 15 or 25%. You just said it.
Oh, God. I hope that's not true, though. Do you think it is? Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, no. I was so hoping you weren't going to say that, Mark. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com. We're going to continue our discussion next week on all these issues. Hope you'll join us. In the meantime, just about ready to put up the show notes at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com, and I'll put a link to Mark's website, getoutstartover.com, as well. Our time is up, everybody. I hope you have a great week. I am heading off to Europe on Thursday, and I'll report back when I get back on what I find there. Take care, everybody. Have a great week.